This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know when you smudged a piece of paper with the side of your hand and it gets covered in black pencil lead? Well, next time, don't be so quick to reach for a napkin, because that black smudge is actually layers and layers of a material called graphene. It has unique properties that are making scientists from all the disciplines, physicists, chemists, biologists, engineers, they all want to create it and experiment with it. It could lead to faster computers, thinner electronics, better coatings. Could it be the next silicon that we all waited for back there in the 50s? Here to talk about it are my guests, A.T. Charlie Johnson, professor of physics and astronomy and director of the Nano Biointerface Center at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, Ira. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. James Hone, professor of mechanical engineering at Columbia University in New York. He joins us here in our CUNY studios.
Also a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, the last time we talked about graphene, it was made by taking a piece of scotch tape and putting it on a pencil and just pulling it off, and then you had a layer of graphene, or graphite, very thick.
It still is. For the best stuff, it still is. But there are a few other ways to make it now.
Yeah.
In much larger sizes, we can grow it on the surface of metals like copper. So you can take kind of a copper foil. It's like tin foil, but made out of copper, and you can coat that with a single atom thick of graphene.
Well, if it's been in our lead pencils, and it's not really lead, it's graphite, in our pencils for so long, and it's been around, why have we just discovered the magical things that it might be able to do?
I think the big issue was actually to see it and to know it was there. Right, that was really the breakthrough that enabled the Nobel Prize, was they could visualize this single atom thick layer of carbon just using an ordinary optical microscope. That was really the breakthrough that sort of blew the whole thing wide open.
So graphene has been called then 2D instead of 3D because it's so thin, James?
Yeah, that's right. If you're thinking about an electron in graphene, it really can't move up or down. It can only move sideways.
But it's called the strongest material known on Earth, right?
That's right, or at least the strongest that's been ever tested. So we did that experiment in 2008 to look at this property, and I have a coffee cup or a paper cup in front of me here, and we imagine that if you had a sheet of Saran wrap on that cup and you tried to break it with a pencil. If that Saran wrap were graphene, it would be so strong that it would take about a ton of force.
No kidding.
To break through.
No,
right.
So what if I had that sheet, and what would it look like sitting in front of me?
Well, the actual graphene, you'd hardly be able to see it. So if you put it on a piece of plastic or glass, you see a very, very faint gray tint.
Could you hold it in your hand?
It would probably just fold and crinkle up. If you tried just to hold the graphene itself, it's so thin.
Because one layer thin, you can actually see that one layer, almost see it.
That's the amazing thing.
Yeah, you can see it, yeah.
You can?
Yes. I mean, as Jim said, if you put it on some piece of plastic, you can see this gray tinge, right? If you stack them 1, 2, 3, 4, you can see the tone of the gray change as they overlay.
Uh-huh. And so why is it so difficult to make? Why is it taking so long to manufacture it?
I think the biggest, there's actually been remarkable progress in moving towards manufacturing it. I think that what's holding people back right now is to justify a really significant investment to do it on a huge scale. I was just looking at a paper this morning where at Sony they've made graphene, it's about 1 foot wide and literally as long as a football field, 100 meters in length. So it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was just reading that there are now more than 7,000 graphene-related patents, with the largest number, more of 2,000 of them being held by China, and Samsung holds more than 400. And the bloggers are hinting that the next big patent fight is going to be between Samsung and Apple, and they're going to be fighting over graphene.
I saw that also. Samsung moved very quickly into the field. There were a number of researchers both in Korea and who had been in the U.S. and moved back to Korea, including one from Columbia, who really ignited the field. And Samsung realized that it could be used as some very interesting components to help make a cell phone flexible, bendable.
And if it's clear and it's thin and flexible, could you not make a screen out of it somehow, perhaps?
That's definitely one of the applications that people talk about, would be a layer in a touch screen. for a flexible phone, like Jim mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And how about clothing? Could people keep talking about new clothing, the Internet of Things or something, you know?
Yeah, I think you can certainly imagine wearable electronic devices that would be bendable, that could be inside your clothing or attached to your clothing and could measure things that go on in your body, radio the information out to some central location if that's what you wanted. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely possible. I haven't heard about anybody making actual clothing completely out of graphene, although someone could well try if we get to that stage.
You know, we have 3D printers, right? Could you make a 3D printer and use graphene and print out on it? Or?
Sure. I think one of the things that a lot of us have looked at is mixing graphene into different kinds of plastics to try to make it stronger or electrically conductive or more conductive of heat. And you could always – it's already being done to mix graphene into plastics, and you could easily 3D print those.
So what's the difference between a sheet of graphene and a nanotube of carbon? Are they equivalent? Are they the same thing?
They're almost the same thing. And I think that's part of the reason that graphene was so exciting, the field exploded so quickly after it was discovered or rediscovered, was that lots of us, including Charlie and myself, had been studying nanotubes already.
Right.
And the way you understand the properties of a nanotube is you understand what graphene is, and then you roll it up into a tube. And so we kind of went back to page one of the book and said, okay, now we can look at the stuff without rolling it up.
Uh-huh. So it's
yeah, I think Jim is exactly right, right? That not only we had all the ideas in place from our studies of carbon nanotubes, but also all the experimental infrastructure. Many of the same measurements were performed on graphene, and they had been essentially perfected during the period people were studying nanotubes.
So you basically have an object waiting for a usage. Would that be correct? What's the best use to make of it?
I think that's fair, yeah.
Really strong. It conducts electricity better than copper. Would that be right?
It can conduct electricity better than copper at room temperature. Yes.
Could you turn it into a semiconductor and make transistors out of it?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So
that's a little trickier.
That's a little tricky. Right, so a semiconductor is a material that, depending on how many electrons are in it, can either conduct or not conduct,
right.
And that's why we use them as switches
right.
in your computer. Mm-hmm. So a graphene can turn on and off a little bit, maybe by a factor of 10, but it doesn't turn all the way off.
Oh.
And so it's not a great digital material. So there's a lot of work that's been done to try to take perfect graphene and do something to it to introduce a band gap, so to make it switchable.
Mm. I'd like to bring on another guest. He's the author of a paper in Nature Materials that describes how he made graphene with a blender. Jonathan Coleman is professor in chemical physics at Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Tell us how you made. Can you describe what you did here for us?
Yeah, well, it all started. We'd been making quite good quality graphene by adding ultrasonic energy to graphite in a liquid, and that causes the graphene to slide off the graphite, and you get nice graphene in a liquid. And we've been doing that for some years when an English chemical company called Thomas Swan came to us and said, can you scale up that process to make large quantities of this stuff? And so, of course, I said, because there was money on the table, I said, yeah, of course we can. And then I had to think, actually, how are we going to do this? And, it was really clear very quickly that we needed a new way to do it. So we had to think outside the box, and that's really what led to the blender.
So what do you do? Can you do this at home in your home blender?
Well, we started off by doing this with industrial blenders. So they're machines that cause the liquid to move quite rapidly. And when you have the liquid moving at different velocities in different positions, that sort of causes the graphene to slide off the graphite sheets. So we scaled that process up until we could get quite a lot of graphene. So we made graphene dispersions or inks at the 300-liter scale. So that's, a big bathtub full of ink. So at that point, we really wanted to understand the process. So we did a little bit of maths and looked at the theory, and we found that actually this process should work in a kitchen blender. The motor is powerful enough to create high enough shear rates. So we bought a kitchen blender for $39.99 in the local shop. We put some graphite in. We put some water in. We wanted to keep it quite simple, so we added a household detergent, which is what we use in the kitchen here, Fairy Liquid, and you turn the blender on and you've got graphene almost immediately. And it's actually quite nice nice quality graphene. Wow. It's good stuff, and it can be made in the kitchen.
And so what do you do with it now that you've got all these tubs of graphene?
Well, you know, that was a real problem, because when we were scaling up this process, we wanted to demonstrate scale-up. So we borrowed a very large industrial blender and a very, very large container, 300 liters, and we made graphene at that scale. And we were very, very pleased because it worked, and the laws of the scale-up said it should work, and it worked exactly as predicted. So we were very, very pleased. And then we looked in the container and realized that we've got 300 liters of graphene-containing liquid, and we didn't really know what to do with it. And that's a non-trivial problem because, you know, you've got 300 liters of nanomaterial. So, we shipped it off to the company that sponsored the project and said, you guys deal with it. So, I think they're selling it.
Now, graphene likes to stick to things, doesn't it?
It really does.
And could that not be a hazard if you inhale it, if you're making it in the blender?
Well, that's always been a concern, and the same with all nanomaterials. I mean, I work in an industry-facing nanoscience center, and one of the things that we have to be able to do is toxicity measurements on all of the nanomaterials that we develop. So one of the first things that the sponsoring company asked us to do was toxicity. And it turns out that certainly for in vitro experiments with a range of cell lines, graphene appears to be, you know, quite safe. So that was very, very good news.
Hmm. Any comment, James?
I would just say that we all create carbon micro and nanoparticles all the time, especially for a diesel truck. So the stuff is out there already anyway.
What would you suggest he do with all that graphene? He had tubs and tubs of it.
He can send some to Columbia. We'll put it to good use.
Can you use it in its liquid form? Is it useful? I guess you could spray it in a spray can, put it on a surface. Would it be useful as a coating?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's really what many people think a lot of the applications of this liquid exfoliated graphene will be, for example, in printed electronics. So, for example, you can put it into the cartridge of an inkjet printer and you can print down patterned lines that are conducting. So you can imagine making electrodes. And one sort of pretty neat experiment we did was graphite is just one of many, many layered compounds. And a wide range of them can be exfoliated to give two-dimensional materials in the same way graphite can. So we exfoliated a material called molybdenum disulfide, which is a semiconductor. So you print electrodes from graphene, and then between the electrodes you print this semiconductor, molybdenum disulfide, and what you have then is an all-inkjet-printed light detector, and it works extremely well. And
wow,
that's just an example of the sort of things that you can do when you've got these nanomaterials in liquids.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Coleman, for taking time to tell us about this technology and how we can all do this on our own blender.
Thank you.
Do not try this at home. Jonathan Coleman, professor in chemical physics at Trinity College in Dublin. I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about graphene with James Hone and... We're going to tell me what you thought. I mean, is this the thing of the future? I mean, if we don't have real uses and we're sitting here thinking of ideas, are we waiting for the hula hoop to come out for this thing?
A little bit, but it's coming already. And I think the applications we heard of from Professor Coleman are some of the great examples of that, where you can make pretty high-performance electronics that you're spraying on, mm-hmm, with an inkjet printer, and it's very bendable, and it can do things besides process information. It can sense light. It can probably emit light if you make the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that a lot of us are looking at this world of materials beyond graphene now. So there's a whole family of these stacked materials that you can unstack.
Oh, really?
And then restack together, shuffle the deck of cards. So we heard about molybdenum disulfide, which is a semiconductor, but it's also a common lubricant. You use it in a machine shop.
And that's what makes something a lubricant, is that the molecules slide against
it. Exactly.
Because graphite's a very, mm-hmm, good lubricant, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the ones that we really like is a material called hexagonal boron nitride, which is an insulator. So
just this morning I was saying.
Exactly. Exactly. So that gives you kind of all of the... a lot of the basic parts of electronics, but there are a lot of others. I don't, mm-hmm, know, Charlie.
Charlie, you want to jump in?
Yeah, so I think that Jim and Jonathan actually are both exactly right, that this is one of the most exciting developments. It's not just carbon. It's not just graphene. That's just one member of a whole family of materials that we're thinking about in completely different ways. So mm-hmm. they can be inks, like we just heard about, where we can use a blender to create them and put them in liquids. But also these other materials are amenable to making the kind of sheets that we talked about for graphene. So boron nitride can be made into single monolayer sheets. Also molybdenum disulfide and many other members of this family of materials.
Right. Could you use it for scaffolding for body parts to grow stem cells and things, you know, that would create body parts, or is it not the right material?
Charlie?
We may not be the right people to answer that question, right? I'm sure there are people working on it, and I'm not aware of any major developments in that area, but
because carbon occurs naturally in your body, right?
And it's relatively biocompatible, right? You can imagine that under the right conditions, it wouldn't cause a danger to your body. And I actually don't know if it's good for growing cells, but it could well be. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's been used to carry fluorescent molecules, for instance, to as very small tags to go inside cells. So there are a lot of biological applications.
Yeah.
You could use it. A single sheet of graphene is a little membrane, and if you put a virus or a protein on it, you can look at it in an electron microscope where you're virtually supporting it in air rather than on a solid substrate.
So where would a carbon nanotube be better than using a sheet of graphene?
If you wanted to make a device that really turned off very strongly, you might think that a carbon nanotube would work better, right? Because mm-hmm. we talked about how the graphene doesn't really want to turn off completely. Mm-hmm. In my lab right now, we think graphene is actually a very strong contender for almost any application.
Even armor for the military? How would it rate with next to Kevlar or something like that?
I've been told that if we can figure out a way to stack 10 million graphene sheets, then they will be extremely interested. So
uh-huh. Is that a lot?
We're not quite there yet.
Is that a hard problem?
Well, we're at a couple per day right now. So
That one would require a completely new paradigm.
You'd have to work overnight, I think. I'm getting that. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more about graphene. Our number, if you'd like to call, is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. You can also tweet us at SciFry, SCIFRI, talking with Charlie Johnson and James Hone about the uses for graphene. Maybe you've got an idea that you'd like to talk about. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We are talking about graphene this hour and very many different uses that you can do with it. Charlie Johnson, a professor of physics and astronomy and director of the Nanobio Interface Center at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, is here. So is James Hone, professor of mechanical engineering at Columbia. Our number, 844-724-8255. If you'd like to call us, you can also tweet us at SciFry at SCIFRI. Let's go to the phones because people are getting creative online with some ideas. Let's go to Ellen Phoenix. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday. Hey there. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey. Go ahead.
Hi. I've just been listening to this very briefly, and gentlemen, I appreciate your time. I'm severely interested in how you can use this particular product in coding. You've mentioned briefly Kevlar and the necessity of 10 million sheets of it, which I'm assuming is not feasible at this particular time. But the whole principle of liquefying it and being able to transfer it via sprayer has got me really interested in what you could do to coat a product. You know, how much force can this product take in an impact, or what can you use this thing to shore up maybe another product that's already on the market?
Could you coat your car, spray your car, and make it pervious? Yeah, good question. Thanks for calling.
So back in the days of nanotubes, actually, one of the first applications of nanotubes, which are also kind of conducting nanocarbon, was to mix into the plastic that was used in some car parts. And when you spray paint a car, you spray paint it with an electrostatic process. You charge it up, and it pulls the paint into it. That doesn't work with plastic because it doesn't conduct electricity. You mix a little bit of carbon in there, and it conducts. And I think there's a lot of work to look at graphene for the same thing. This is kind of one of the first low-hanging fruit type applications, but you can have a very thin spray coating of a of a composite airplane body and protect against lightning and strikes and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Daniel in Ventura, California. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. So I was just wondering, with respect to the space elevator idea, what are the feasibilities of making that cable that would be used for the space elevator out of graphene, as opposed to the common idea of using carbon nanotubes, which, according to my understanding, are way harder to produce than this graphene?
We get this question every time we do a material science story. Can we use it for the space elevator?
So one of the fun things in the paper we wrote a few years back was to actually experimentally demonstrate that, yes, quite possibly,
maybe
the material itself works. Again, we're many orders of magnitude in away as far as production. And I'm still I still don't know what's going to happen when birds hit this thing.
Oh, that's a good question.
And I think the tricky part, right, which people are really have to think about, is the material itself. Like Jim said, just the material is incredibly strong. I mean, it's almost impossible to imagine when he talks his analogy about a piece of saran wrap that would support a truck on the tip of a pencil. But the trick is to translate that strength through this whole enormous structure, if you're imagining something like a space elevator.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting better and better with that with carbon nanotubes, I believe, and many of the techniques that they learn could end up being applied to graphene.
Now, James, I know that you made the world's smallest FM radio.
That was a fun project, yeah. So I think a lot of the things we like to do with graphene take advantage of multiple outstanding properties. So it's very stiff and very strong, also mm-hmm. very light, conducts very well. And the one that got us excited was making it vibrate at very high frequencies. And so we were making these devices vibrate at 100 megahertz. And as you know, that's right in your FM dial.
Right.
And we had a technique for changing the frequency at which they'd vibrate. So from 100 to 100.1 and back. And that is what we call frequency modulation, which
right.
is FM radio.
Right. Cat's whisker is required on this one.
Exactly.
Every day there's something else that somebody thinks of. And I was reading something on phys.org page about making a two-cycle engine using a laser that would heat up the layer of carbon, and it would sort of pucker up and then go back and forth and up and down, and you've got yourself an engine right there. So all you need is the graphene, right?
Right.
You got to find a way to make the graphene. Now, I know that, Charlie, you made a nano sensor out of graphene. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so our interest in my group and also at the NanoBio Interface Center is actually to combine this kind of rapid advance in the area of nanomaterials, graphene and others, and bring them together with advances in engineering of biological molecules. So one of the things we haven't talked about much on this show about graphene is that because it's only one atom thick, all of its physical properties are very sensitive to its environment. If you change what's right next to the graphene, even just a few atomic distances away, the graphene changes its properties. It conducts better or worse, for example. So we created a set of sensors where we used the graphene to read out a protein that was attached to it chemically. And this protein actually was a modified version of a protein that is in the cell membranes of your body. It was modified by collaborators at Penn in the Departments of Chemistry and Anesthesiology, Jeff Sabin and Renyu Liu. So it was modified, so it was of interest for nanotechnology. And we made nanosensors that could detect the same molecules that this protein would detect in your body. And the upshot is, I think the paper showed, that you could make hundreds of these devices, and essentially every one of them would work. We made about 200, and only one of them failed. So it shows that scaling is at least possible.
Yeah. Well, we wish you both, gentlemen, very good luck in your working with graphene. It sounds fascinating. You know, I hope it's not one of these technologies that's always 10 years away. You know, but it's coming. It looks like it's...
I have the same hope, Ira. Yeah.
We'd
like to see
funding.
Something emerge.
Just need the funding. I've never heard that on our radio show before, but you're absolutely right. Charlie Johnston is professor of physics and astronomy and director of a NanoBio Interface Center at University of Pennsylvania in Philly. And James Hone is professor of mechanical engineering right here in Columbia in New York. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.